All right, thank you everyone for your patience. With that, we're going to dive into the presentation now. If you are listening to this presentation and means you're interested in the International Education Administrator, or IEA for short, opportunities to Taiwan specifically. My name is Sarah Causer. I'm an outreach and recruitment specialist at the Institute of International Education. I've been working on this program for about 3 to 4 years specifically, and it's just such a wonderful program to administer. Today, I'm joined by my colleague, Sophia Yang, who is also at the Institute of International Education. Sophia, would you like to quickly say hello and introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. My name is Sophia, and I've been a program officer with the Fulbright Scholar and Student Program for the last 7 years, and it's been a pleasure to have focused my work in the East Asia Pacific region this whole time. So I'm excited to speak with you today on the opportunities available in Taiwan.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Sophia. And then both of us are very excited to be joined by an alum of this program in particular, Katie, who is on the call. If you would like to unmute and introduce yourself as well, that would be wonderful.
Hi, I'm Katie Choman at Juniata College, and I was very happy to be asked to talk about my experience on the IEA program in Taiwan, and look forward to telling you more.
Perfect. Thank you, Kati. We really appreciate you being here, and I know everyone on the line is looking forward to learning about your experience later on. Before I dive into the rest of this presentation, I just want to let you know that this session is being recorded, and we will archive it and have it on our website, typically within 5 business days, but I will also email it out to everyone who has registered, so just keep an eye out for that. So quickly diving into the program, the Fulbright Scholar Program was established in 1946 by Congress. The program itself is the government's flagship international exchange, educational and cultural exchange program. To this day, it is still sponsored by the U.S. Department of State. And with that funding, it is administered by the Institute of International Education. So you hear all these different entities. That's really how they all work together. We always start off these presentations with the mission of the program, and the reason we do that is it's very inherent and integral into having a very successful application. So we do work in partnership with 160 countries worldwide. You can see the different types of opportunities that we do offer through students and faculty. This opportunity in particular is really dedicated to administrators at university and college campuses. Additionally, most of these IEA opportunities do allow for professionals who do work within international education as a third-party entity the opportunity to also apply, so just kind of keeping that in mind. The mission of the program itself is to foster mutual understandings between nations, advance knowledge across communities, and improve lives around the world. The reason we highlight that is you will be asked a question in your application as to why you've chosen to apply for Fulbright, and so we really want you to bring it full circle back to this mission and why that really resonates with you. So just keep that in mind. The next slide that we always like to start off with is very near and dear to all of our hearts, that diversity and inclusion is really at the forefront of this program. We want to make sure that the program reflects the best and brightest that the United States has to offer, and we want to make sure that we are representing the entire United States. You can see that the opportunities are very open, and you can see the entire mission statement on this screen. This mission statement can also be found on our website as well as on the Department of State's website for Fulbright. Diving into the numbers a bit before I really start to highlight this particular program to Taiwan, you can see on the screen about 800 U.S. scholars and administrators go overseas, of which these IEA participants are part of that. You can see there's a reciprocal exchange, so there's about 900 visiting scholars who do come to the U.S., and there are opportunities for you to actually bring those scholars to your campus. So if anyone has questions, I'm more than happy to talk about that as well. And then you can see the other side of the program that many of you might be familiar with, being the student side, both on the U.S. and foreign side of the program. We are getting very close to having almost 400,000 Fulbrighters to have participated within these programs, and we're very excited about that. The program started sending about 80 participants in the past. And so the fact that we're sending about 800 U.S. scholars is a really tremendous growth in our opinion. For that distribution of awards, what you can see is for the 2018-19 cycle on this screen, that little green piece of the pie called seminars are what you're interested in within those IEAs. And so they make up about 9% of the entire cohort of 800 scholars that we send annually. So it's a pretty good slice of the pie. It's a very huge area of growth and really does a tremendous job of you bringing insight back to your university, back to your college, and really sharing these opportunities with your institution and helping your institution internationalize itself. So it's a very important part of the Fulbright Scholar Program. Diving into the different countries that we do have participants to, you can see on the screen here. For these Fulbright IEA seminars, they take place in 7 different countries traditionally. As you can see on this screen, we're not recruiting for this cycle, the 2021-2022 cycle for India and Japan. If you have questions about that, I'm happy to answer them as well. But the majority of these seminars do take place over the course of 2 weeks. The reason I say majority is France is the outlier, but that seminar in particular is only a week and a half. So just keep that in mind. Each of these countries, as you can see on this page, is really looking for a unique profile. We have done a previous webinar that dives into each country. This webinar in particular, I'm just going to dive into the Taiwan overview next. So I will get to that in just a moment. But as a holistic approach to this, each of these seminars are really intended to have a very broad professional and personal impact on you as a grantee. From this experience, your home campus will benefit from increased knowledge of that host country's higher education system, and it should be able to aid in the development of programs, international student advising, and broader global collaboration. Additionally, grantees will be able to broaden your network with possible partnerships and cooperation through other Fulbright IEA grantees. So, as I said before, it's a 2-week seminar. You go as a cohort. So just keep that in mind that you'll be engaging with other colleagues from the U.S. as well as colleagues overseas. And you'll get a better sense of that as we learn from Kati's experience on this program. One thing I always like to note is it's really important for you to think of your application in relation to your home university. This is not just a personal application, but it is more broadly one that aims to increase institutional internationalization. So just keep that in mind that yes, you're applying for this personal grant, but we want you to think more holistically and broadly about this opportunity. So quickly diving into the eligibility for this program, across the board, you must be a U.S. citizen. For this program in particular, which does differ from the other type of scholar opportunities, that PhD or terminal degree is not required. As you saw on the previous screen, each country is looking for a very unique set of applicants, so you will have to have the appropriate professional experience and accomplishment per that particular award, so just keep that in mind. Each one of these grants is conducted in English, so you do not need to have a host language requirement. So just be aware of that. It will be conducted in English. And pretty much across the board for many of these, the directors of the English language programs and instructors of such programs are unfortunately not eligible to apply for the majority of these awards. But you can see that listed on each specific award online, which I will show you shortly. And then the last bullet point before I do go on is you can apply for more than one Fulbright in a lifetime and receive more than one Fulbright, but there is a 2-year waiting period. Another question I do get every year is we're currently recruiting for the 2021 to 2022 cycle, so all the awards you see up, you can only apply for one in a cycle. So you can apply for Taiwan this year, and then should you not get it, you could apply for Taiwan next year or choose a different country, but keep in mind you can't apply for multiple countries and award in a cycle. So with that, I'm actually going to pass the reins over to Sophia to talk a little bit more about Taiwan and what they are looking for. Sophia?
Yes. So Taiwan is one of the newest programs to join the IEA family, and it started in 2017. So grantees who go to Taiwan you know, will have the opportunity to really learn deeply about Taiwan's higher education system, their society and their culture. And they do that through, you know, they go on campus visits, they have appointments with officials, there's also cultural activities, briefings, and of course the networking opportunity to meet with other international education professionals. And so for Taiwan, they're really looking for the senior level university administrators who really have a substantial international education responsibility, or if you are in the study abroad office, as study abroad advisors with at least 3 years of experience are also you know, encouraged to apply. You do, applicants should be affiliated with the 2 or 4 year colleges or universities. You can also be affiliated with a nonprofit international education exchange organization as well. And we are looking for candidates who have not had significant professional visits to Taiwan in the last 2 years. And applicants really should demonstrate, you know, their institution's interest in increasing the number of Americans studying in Taiwan. So Taiwan's program is really more focused on, you know, having building American, having Americans, you know, study abroad in Taiwan. And so there, if you, you know, are in that field and can do that for your institution, this is such a great opportunity for you to consider. If you are in an English language department, this is not the, it's just important to note that this is not the correct award for you, but we would be happy to see if there are other awards of interest for you. So these are the types of grantees. The profile of the applicants that Taiwan is seeking. And if you're interested in learning more, please reach out to Sarah or myself, and I would be glad to you know, to speak with you about your application.
Great. Thanks so much, Sophia. And I definitely know we will have some questions at the end that will definitely be geared towards you and your experience on this program. So moving along, before I show you how to access the catalog awards, Sophia really did touch on selecting the right award a bit. So each one of these awards is really looking for that unique profile. And so as she said, for this one in particular, it's not the right award for those who are directors of English language programs, but there could be another award that's right for you. So it's really key for you to get into the catalog of awards. Look at each one of these and see which one really matches for you and your background. Some questions you might be asking yourself is, how has your campus been working to internationalize itself? As I said earlier, this is not just a personal application, but one for your institution as well. So think of it in that lens, that what is your institution trying to accomplish? Where do they hope to grow? And that might help decide which region or country you might be interested in. Does your institution have a plan to increase the cooperation with one of these particular IEA seminar countries? If so, how can this help get you from point A to point B? Additionally, are there other institutional goals to increase the number of students from any one of these countries? Perhaps that's increasing the students coming in from overseas to your campus, or perhaps it's increasing the number of study abroad students that you're sending. So these are particular questions that we really just want you to think about as you're crafting that application and choosing each country. On a personal note, you might want to think about your professional experience in one of these countries and whether or not you've had any significant professional experience. Sophia did mention that in regards to Taiwan. Each award will say whether or not what is too much experience. When we're talking about professional experience, we're talking about going over for a longer period of time, not just a vacation. We're talking about extensive connections and MOUs and relationships that you've built with certain countries. So just keep that in mind. And then lastly, we want you, again, to think of this in terms of your current professional profile. Again, each award, there's really one award for almost everyone in, within this kind of this program. So we want you to think of, what is your profile? How many years of experience do you have? Do you just have 3? Do you have 5+? Because that will really differentiate which award is right for you. So just keep those in mind as you are trying to select the right award. As I said, I will be sharing the recording for this afterwards, so you will have access to all of these URLs in that as well. But our website is a great place for you to start to get access on it. There's application guidelines. There's a link to the application. There's a section that really describes what to include for your CV, what to include for these application components, leading questions, questions for you to provide to your reference writers. So there's a lot of really good information, and I will showcase that in just a moment. The next piece that's really integral is that catalog of awards, and I promise I will showcase that in just one moment. That's for you to read exactly every year what that country is looking for, and there are times that each country could change what they're looking for. So it's very important for you to see that year in and year out. If you do choose to maybe not apply this year, but next year, just make sure to look at that because there could be some slight variation. In terms of learning, you're already attending a webinar, which is great. There are other webinars coming up. There's that overview that I mentioned earlier where we walk through every country, as well as there's an application walkthrough webinar. So just keep your eye out for that. And then the Connect piece is we have a system called My Fulbright where you can actually register your interest in this program in particular and in within multiple countries. If you're only interested in Taiwan, you can register for IEA in Taiwan. That way you keep up to date about information about these opportunities. So just keep that in mind. So with that, I'm going to quickly, as promised, transition to our website. Just give me one moment as I navigate there. All right, let's see if this goes through properly. Should be updating. There we go. So everyone should be able to see our home page right here. The home page is CIES.org. From here, you can navigate over to programs. If you hover over US Scholars, that's where you'll see the IEA seminars. Another shortcut is CIES.org/IEA. It'll get you right here. As I said earlier, there are upcoming webinars as well as past webinars that you can view. You can register for any of the upcoming ones. And then what's really key, I think, that plays into your application is taking a look at the review criteria. This is what's given to the reviewers as they make the selection. So this really will help as you are crafting your application. Under the application tab, there's this blue button where you can actually start your application. Next to it has the application instructions. And as I said, I'll dive into these next components in just a bit. There are these condensable little areas that walk you through each section of the application. So if you have questions about the seminar details that you're writing, about your CV, about your institutional statement, what you should be addressing in it, what's the format, it's all listed here on this application. If you wish to navigate to the catalog of awards, there's this blue hyperlink here. You can click that, and it will actually take you to the particular awards that are eligible within the IEA specifically. If you're interested in just going to the catalog, typically I'm going to pull up this tab. It's awards.cies.org. You'll land on a page similar to this. Don't get overwhelmed. But what you would do is you would hit search awards. And then on this left-hand panel, what you'll do is under the activity, you're going to select seminar. And when you say search awards, it will condense those awards again back to that those five options for this year. Again, typically we do have seven options, but this year in particular it's just these five. From here, you can find the Taiwan award in particular, including the code for this year, and this code does change every year, every time we do offer this opportunity, so keep that in mind. You can see the overview, which we did talk about, the length of the program, the tentative dates, and this is where it will be updated as those are finalized. If they have particular locations already listed out, you'll see that here. And on the right-hand side, this is where you, again, can see eligibility, where that PhD is not required. And for this one in particular, I said you go as a cohort. There are up to 12 grants for this opportunity, as Sophia mentioned as well. So if you are awarded, you'd be going with 11 other participants on this program. The second tab called award requirements, this is really key, and this again is what Sophia went over. This is where you can see what they're looking for, and it's spelled out for you as well as other links at the bottom. In terms of stipend and benefits, each grantee does receive round-trip travel, lodging, per diem to cover their meals, and incidental expenses, as well as group insurance and at airport pickup and drop-off. So this is pretty much a fully funded opportunity. They may say you should have additional funding just for your own personal expenses, so just keep that in mind. But this is how you do navigate this opportunity. One thing that I think is really great about Taiwan is if you go back to this homepage, in the last sentence, there's something that says, click here to view a sample itinerary for a previous IEA to Taiwan, and that's right here. I do have it built into the PowerPoint as well in case you just want to see it in that format, but I just wanted to highlight that they do keep you quite busy. They do have breaks built into this as well, and I know Kathy can really address this as she goes over her experience, that we always say from the moment your feet hit the floor in the morning to you kind of fall in bed at night, they keep you busy. You really get to experience a lot of institutions and organizations and historical and cultural opportunities while in country. But we want you to be aware of what you are signing up for. With that, I'm going to quickly navigate back to the PowerPoint. I went back to the beginning. Apologies for that. All right, let's see if this works. Should show the PowerPoint. Just one moment. All right, so we're back in the PowerPoint. As I said, I did embed an image of that schedule in here in case you don't want to look at it within the catalog of awards. All right, so quickly diving into the application components of these opportunities before I do pass the reins over. Within the application, there's a couple different components that you need to upload or submit within your application. So as I showed you on the website, you can click that blue button to start your application where you'll fill in your biographical details. You will have to select and enter the award number. So make sure you do take that award number from the catalog of awards. You'll say you're interested in the IEA opportunities. You'll pick the award number, and then you'll confirm that award country. This is very important because if you don't select IEA, you're going to see an application for the research and teaching side of the program. So if you want to make sure that you're only seeing what you have to upload, not a course syllabi, not timelines, things like that, it's very important for you to select the IEA opportunities up front. From there, you will upload your seminar details. This, if anyone has applied before or looked into applying in the past, used to be called your statement of intent. It used to be 3 to 5 pages that you would upload and weave together. We've done away with that 3 to 5 pages, and instead we have 5 open-ended questions. They're the same questions that you used to address for your statement of intent. That has not changed, but we felt in conjunction with the reviewers and with our commission partners overseas that this made more sense for this program to make sure that applicants are really addressing what they're looking for in the review process. So for those 5 open-ended questions, I believe I might have a slide next that goes into them, but as a whole, they address your professional biography, your country selection and professional relevance, outcomes and impacts from this opportunity, your personal qualities, and then there is an open-ended additional information opportunity for you to list anything else that you think the review committee should be aware of as they are reviewing your application. Keep in mind this is your opportunity to explain your specific strengths as a candidate to the reviewers and potential hosts, and it must be clear and compelling to audiences both inside and outside of your field. The next piece that you will upload is your CV, and you have up to 6 pages for that. It should be clearly organized and tailored to show how your credential, your professional standings and accomplishments really relate to this opportunity and to international education. You'll include your employment history in a chronological order, starting with the most recent. And as I showed you on the website, there's a clear section on it that walks you through the CV, your formatting, and how you should upload that information. The next component, which has not changed, is your institutional statement. Every application does require this institutional statement, and it should address the following. general information about your home institution. What type of institution is it? Is it MSI? Is it a community college? The total number of enrollments that you have on your campus, the number of degrees you offer on campus as well. You should also include the number of international students on campus and where they're coming from. If you were interested in the opportunity this year to Korea, you do actually have to include the number of Korean students currently on the campus. That's one of the caveats that it is required for that particular award. Additionally, you can address the study abroad opportunities available on campus and any institutional partnerships with particular institutions and universities in that country where the grant takes place. So if your institution does have relationships and partnerships with any particular institution in Taiwan, this is your time to really showcase that and let the review committee know what those relationships currently are and where they stand. And then lastly, what you would include in here are your future goals and plans for internationalizing the campus. The next piece has changed a bit since the past. This year, you are only required to have two letters of reference submitted. With these two letters of recommendation, your recommenders will evaluate your professional qualifications, the potential for your institutional impact, and your personal qualifications and qualities. These recommenders can come from a variety of people. However, one letter must be from your current supervisor or someone you report to at your institution, and they really should be familiar with your administrative skills, your leadership success, so on and so forth within kind of that professional area of reference. While the other letter can come from any colleague who can speak to your personal attributes and your interest within international education. This person can be either at your current institution or from another institution. So you have a little bit of freedom for that second writer. Keep in mind, you will not upload these letters yourself. You will actually register, once they agree to be your letter of recommendation writer, you'll register them in the system, first, last name, email address. The system will actually kick out an email to them directly where, whoops, sorry, my watch is going off. They will get that email and they will actually register their account and upload that letter for you. One of the pro tips I always suggest is sharing a copy of those seminar details, those five questions we asked. Share that copy with your reference writers just so they can refer to it and allude to what your goals that you've put forth are. The other thing I will note at this point is these letters should be submitted by the deadline for each particular award. So keep in mind that that does happen. They can submit before you submit, and they can submit after you submit. But they just need to make sure they submit by that deadline as well. So you don't have to wait for them to submit their pieces in order for you to submit yours. You can always log in after you submit and change and send reminders to your letter writer. So just keep that in mind that you do not have to wait on them. As I said previously, I will go into those seminar details quickly. You can see the character limit on this screen. So again, in lieu of this statement of intent, you're going to be asked to respond to the following questions on the application. The first is your professional biography. It's where you'll highlight your educational background, your professional administrative experience, your most significant professional accomplishments, your key responsibilities on campus within your current role. And you can also include information about professional affiliations and memberships, community service, publications, honors, and awards, things that really sum up that professional biography. For the country selection and professional relevance, this is where you're really going to address why you're applying to the IEA seminar for this particular country. You'll describe your professional responsibilities as they relate to the grant. This can include achievements in the development of international initiatives or systems. Additionally, you might address what expertise you can share with peers in that host country. We really ask that you describe your experience with this country and include if you visited the country previously and any communications or interactions with that country, such as partnerships, cultural engagement, and experiences sending and receiving students. The next piece you have up to 3,000 characters to address is the outcomes and impact. For me, this is the one I always get really excited about reading, just to see all the various ideas that come out of these. But this is where you would showcase the how your participation in this IA seminar would contribute to the international education goals on your institution, so when you come back home. What are your anticipated impacts that this participation would have on your institution or the community at large? We really want you to be specific and consider the outcomes with the potential to be broad and sustainable. Things you might consider are, how would you share what you've learned with your home institution and others? What is that anticipated impact that this participation would have on your professional development and career? So that's what we're really looking for within this outcomes and impact. The next one, your personal qualities, is we're asking you to describe your ability to be adaptable, culturally sensitive, collegial, and how you may serve as a cultural ambassador for the United States. This is really key because, as I said a few times, you are traveling as a cohort. You are meeting with a lot of colleagues overseas. So it's very important for the review committee to really get a sense of these personal qualities. And then the last section, as I said earlier, is additional information. So should you wish to choose to reveal or provide additional information that you want the review committee to be aware of, that is your chance to address it at that point. You do not feel you... If you have anything else you wish to address, you can leave it blank. It is not a requirement, but it is there just in case there's something very important that couldn't be addressed in the previous four opportunities. So quickly diving into the timeline before I do pass the reins over, the deadline for this particular award is September 15th, so we still have time. From there, you should be notified in January, and after that, you should be hopefully I believe you'll be notified of your final selection in January as well. So this timeline that came from the website is still being reviewed, but I believe we're pushing it up. And Sophia can correct me if I'm wrong. But the award, again, will take place in March. But Sophia, I know you're still on the line. Typically in previous years, when do they tend to find out their final notification? I think we always beat the timeline.
We do. I know there's a pretty short turnaround, so we do try to get the final notifications out. Typically, we've been able to get it out, sometime in January. So we still have plenty of time before the grant begins.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Sophia. And I think we have. Or we are this week updating this timeline on the website. Again, this came straight from the website, so apologies. If it has been updated, I'll make sure it's updated on the version that we do publish with this recording. So with that, I'm going to stop speaking at you, and I'm really excited to hear about Kati's experience on this program. Again, we are going to take questions at the end, so if you have any questions that you really want her to answer, please address them in the question box. But with that, I really just want to pass over the reins. Kathy?
Thank you, Sarah, very much, and thank you, Sophia. So at the time at which I applied for the IEA seminar to Taiwan, it was the right time for my institution, Juniata College, which is a liberal arts institution in central Pennsylvania, small institution, about 1,500 students, and it was the right time for me professionally. So for my institution, we were in the beginning stages of developing a few exchange relationships. Juniata primarily operates on exchange, so even though the IEA, the seminar focuses on sending U.S. students abroad to Taiwan, my intent was really to sort of explore exchange possibilities, part of which is the intent to get more U.S. students to study abroad in Taiwan. And so it was a perfect opportunity to look at a broad range of institutions and not only visit two institutions as a follow-up to my time with the seminar that we were developing a relationship with, but also look at some other institutions. So it made a lot of sense for me in terms of the context of my institution. Personally, at about the time I participated, I had been in the field of international education administration for over 25 years, about 26 years, and it was a wonderful experience to be able to be a part of a delegation again. I had done some other like a Baden-Württemberg seminar earlier in my career, but to be a part of a delegation, so being able to contribute based on my experience of leading delegations for years and years and leading Fulbright Hayes groups. So it was nice to just be a part of a delegation and also, quite frankly, to not be the person behind the scenes dealing with all of the logistics and problem solving. So that was wonderful as well. I felt as if I could focus on the learning experience and also the intercultural experience. You know, there really is such a thing as teaching an old dog new tricks. And so during the time that we participated, even though it was for 2 weeks and we were traveling as a cohort, I felt like there was so much immersion that I could have in the culture and also be reminded of important cultural experiences. So the example I can give in the previous slide, that was Dr. William Volke, who was the executive director of the Fulbright Commission in Taiwan. And he would remind our group as we would get on the bus and people were tired after, you know, maybe the third or fourth visit during, you know, a particular day, remind us that it was very important to appropriately say our farewells to our guests and to acknowledge their time and their efforts with us. And so for me, that was just something I cited in my final report, that sort of paying attention to the small cultural gestures that are so important, it's an important thing to do. So that was a really positive part of the experience. Relating back to my institution, in terms of being the right time for my institution, being able to articulate that in my application in terms of what I had hoped to do as a result of the experience in terms of program development, exchange development, sending more students to Taiwan, which indeed happened. So, for example, we had visited National Chap Tung University and subsequent to the Fulbright seminar that May, I was able to have three students participate in a seminar for just about a week in Taiwan. Of course, it was their first time going to Taiwan, but it was a result of a specific interaction at National Chap Tung University and getting some more information about this sort of research symposium seminar that they had in May. And so that was really a direct benefit to my institution and to my students. I also was able to send a faculty member again to do some work at one of the institutions as a short-term teaching research exchange as a result of the connections made. Something else that I cited in my report and Sarah also mentioned is the ability to interact with colleagues from the United States, really from all across the United States in a diverse array of institutions, and that was also a part of the professional development for me. And being with some colleagues who actually have Chinese language skills, either native Chinese speakers or in some cases someone who grew up in China and spent a lot of her formative years in China, and then someone who studied abroad in China as an undergraduate student and then continued in master's and PhD work with Chinese language and culture. So that experience of being a part of this diverse group with a lot of different, not only institutions represented, but I would say different skill sets and different personalities. That was really a good experience as well, because I think there's learning to be had through being a part of a group, navigating a new culture. And I feel as if for myself, from a professional development standpoint, it was helpful for me to sort of have that experience of crossing cultures, of being in new environments, of figuring out things, you know, and so I would relate back to students coming from abroad to study on my small campus or the U.S. students going abroad and studying abroad. So that was just another interesting element of the development. And since my time with the IEA seminar it's been great to be connected to Fulbright and all of those resources that are related to being a Fulbright alumna. So just being able to join sort of virtual alumni development opportunities, being able to contribute back to the program by speaking, for example, today, or by helping to be a part of a Fulbright peer review committee, I think all of that is helpful for me in my own professional development, but also I can bring that back to my institution in terms of understanding more broadly the field of international education. And then finally, I guess what I'd like to say is I knew very little about Taiwan, and so the opportunity to learn about a new place and really, I think, to get to know people, even though the program itself was about 2 weeks and then I had stayed on some time longer with a faculty member to visit some institutions, that it was amazing and memorable and as a result of the IEA, just the extent to which my institution, Juniata, is exchanging with Taiwan in terms of Taiwanese students on our campus, sending students to Taiwan, that understanding of Taiwan has really grown for me, but also for my institution. So that has been tremendous, and it's just such a, I think, really an exciting place to learn about. It's certainly its political history is interesting, and I think, you know, especially right now with the pandemic and Taiwan's just really admirable efforts in controlling the pandemic has been especially interesting, and their efforts to be able to contribute to other countries by sending, you know, personal protective gear and things. It's just really this powerful and interesting place and culture. So thank you very much. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Tati. I really appreciate that. I'm definitely hearing your perspective of being someone who leads delegations and now attending one. I think that's very interesting to really get that viewpoint on these opportunities. And it's really wonderful to hear that kind of follow through and connection based on what's going on right now. So I appreciate that. And again, I encourage anyone who is listening, we're almost to the Q&A portion, but if you do have questions specifically, to address them in the chat box, and we'll get to them in just a moment. So before I do get to the Q&A portion, we do have some additional upcoming webinars. Should you still be interested in other opportunities, keep in mind, all of these deadlines do come after the deadline for Taiwan, but if you are interested in any of the other opportunities, they are listed on the screen, including the dates of those presentations. For Russia in particular, they're only looking for community college administrators, so if you are the community college, this is the perfect one for you, or if you do have any other colleagues that you know at a local community college, please encourage them to look for this opportunity. And with that, you can see our email address on this webpage, iea@iie.org. If we don't have time to get to your questions, please address it there. If you have questions about which is the right program for you, you're more than welcome to submit your CV to us. We'll take a look at it. We'll see what your background is, what length of time, and maybe which award, in our opinion, might be a better option for you. But feel free to use that and set up any time for any advising calls with us. And with that, I'm going to open the floor for questions and introduce my colleague Chinny, who has been on the back end looking at your questions and answering any technical difficulties anyone's had. So Chinny, do you have any questions?
Yeah, so we do have some questions here. All right, so our first question is for you, Sarah. If I apply for a program and notify that I am not recommended for that program, may I apply for another program? The deadlines and notifications do not make it easy to do that.
That is a great question. So let me see if I can easily get back to that overview page. You can only apply for one program in a cycle year. So what you see on the page is floating right now, this chart, is this is the cycle year for the 2021 to 2022 cycle. The cycle goes live the first week of February, and it actually ends that same first week of February the following year. So as you see, we start February 1 and we kind of end February 1 with France and Germany. So you can only choose one country in this cycle. So let's say you find out for Taiwan in January, and then there's still time for you to turn around and apply for France and Germany. You actually cannot do that. But for the 2022-2023 cycle, you could apply for France or Germany. Does that make sense and help? It's only one a year within this group of applications.
All right. Our next question is, can you apply for IEA and a different scholarly award in the same year?
Another great question. If you are applying for a opportunity to do a U.S. Scholar teaching and or research opportunity, you have to choose between that and the IEA. Let's say, for instance, you're applying for the Fulbright Specialist Program, which is not administered by IIE. You could apply for that at the same time you're applying for an IEA or the research and or teaching opportunities. You'll see that in the application. The application is the same for both of these on the scholar side, U.S. Scholar for Teaching and Research and the IEAs. You just choose which award within that. So again, for the 2021 to 22 cycle, you have to just choose one award, but great question.
All right, let's see. So our next question is, can you give some examples of senior administrators?
Yes. Sophia, feel free to chime in as well. But traditionally, what they're looking for are your presidents, your provosts, directors, deans, kind of within that category of senior administrators. Sophia, would you add anyone else within that category?
No, I think you pretty much captured it. I've seen past participants with titles, associate vice president, assistant provost, professor, and assistant deans, executive directors. These are more of the senior positions. But again, if you are, you know, executive board advisor, you are also certainly welcome to apply with a minimum of 3 years experience.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Cynthia.
All right. Let's see. All right. Do I have to know a foreign language?
No. For each of these awards, especially in a regular recruitment cycle where all seven are recruiting, the seminars are conducted entirely in English. If you do have any local language knowledge, it would probably benefit you on a personal level if you wish to interact with anyone that you run in day by day, but it is not a requirement by any means.
All right. Let's see. All right, so we have a question. Someone is a full-time student in a master's in higher education, in international higher education, and they want to know if they are eligible without currently working in at an institution. Are they eligible to apply?
Sophia, my thought on this is, I know that you would have to have 3 years of experience within that role. Sophia, I believe, isn't it important for them to be currently associated with an institution?
Yeah, exactly, yes. You would want to have the professional experience and, you know, really be in a position to help grow the international programming at your institution.
Okay. All right. So let's see. For Kati, what was a highlight of your experience
So I really liked the opportunity of, it was an intense schedule, and that is something please know, and know that you are working, although it's really a fun kind of work because it's different than what most of our day-to-day work is, and so the ability to have time to learn new things and explore a new culture. So the highlight for me personally were the times that I did have free time to be able to explore on my own, and in particular in Taiwan, in Taipei, there's this amazing, I can't remember what the facility was formerly, but it's the Botanic Gardens, and on the Botanic Gardens is a wonderful kind of artisan museum / workshop area, and there's a vegetarian buffet on the top of this. I think it was like the former agricultural ministry or something, but it's this beautiful sort of whole number of buildings in the Botanic Gardens. So I actually spent, I think, I went out three different times whenever we had some free time just to be in that space and to look at some different exhibitions they had going on. And so that was a personal highlight. I don't often, when I travel internationally on behalf of my college, I don't often have downtime, again, because I'm so responsible for the delegation and responsible for, planning for the next day and everything. So just a little bit of time for cultural immersion was certainly a highlight. And I think also in visiting indigenous cultures, that was a part of the learning that was entirely new to me, and so that was fascinating, visiting a museum and then actually visiting one of the communities in southern Taiwan was amazing.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. So, Sophia, this question is for you. Someone wants to know if their time as an international student in Taiwan, would that be a disadvantage for this award? That experience was over 25 years ago.
No, not at all. I mean, they're in terms of eligibility, they're really looking for someone who without that recent experience, and they can certainly speak to how that experience, broadened their interest in Taiwan or deepened their interest in Taiwan, and really, what benefit would this experience have on top of what they've already had in Taiwan.
Okay. All right. Let's see. And our last question is, these two questions might be kind of similar. One person is a career services director, and the other person is a global internship professional, and they want to know if this program would be best for them, or would a different IEA program be more suitable?
So I know, especially for the career service professional, that Sophia addressed the Taiwan portion. Germany is definitely open to that background and profile. That's something that they are looking for as well. So that could be an option for you. I'd like to hear from Sophia and even Kati about, if you can address who and what was the makeup of kind of the rest of your cohort, if you can kind of put that hat back on real quick, and then we'll toss it over to Sophia.
So just real quickly, it seems that most of us were leaders in the field of international education on our institutions, so really people who impact the ability of students to, of either exchanges or of students who study abroad. I mean, we had, I would say, a range within that, so we had some people who were primarily responsible, for example, for study abroad portfolios. We didn't explore so much the possibility of internship experiences, but really focused more on the sort of traditional study abroad. However, I could see how that's possible in Taiwan, but since we were visiting higher education institutions, mostly the focus was on exchange and study abroad.
Thanks so much. Sophia, from your experience, how do you feel about those two roles fitting in with this opportunity?
I think something to think about is really your institution, the goals, you know, and how that ties in with Taiwan. You know, does your institution have, you know, really, can you demonstrate an institutional interest in increasing the number of Americans staying in Taiwan? And if you can tie that in, you know, I think that is something during, that is certainly a possibility, but something you want to keep in mind in terms of whether this is the best fit for you.
I think that's great advice. Thank you, Sophia. Do we have any other questions, Jenny?
All right. So I think that's it on all of our questions.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone, so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you taking this time. We do hope you are interested in this opportunity. We hope to see your applications come down the pipe. And if you do have questions, again, please reach out to me. If you have any questions for Kati or Sophia, again, you can address them to me at iea@iie.org, and I'll connect with them and try and get those answers from them for you. But again, Kati, I really appreciate you taking the time to be on this call and share your experience. It was really wonderful to hear from you. And thank you, Sophia. I really appreciate the time. So with that, we're going to end a little bit early today, but please reach out with any questions, and we hope you take care and have a good rest of the week. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.